and a fourth was a sin or scandal as yet unknown to the Christians of the East. In the beginning of his reign, Leo himself had abolished the state of concubines and condemned, without annulling, third marriages. But his patriotism and love soon compelled him to violate his own laws, and to incur the penance which, in a similar case, he had imposed on his subjects. In his three first alliances, his nuptial bed was unfruitful. The emperor required a female companion, and the empire a legitimate heir. The beautiful Zoe was introduced into the palace as a concubine, and after a trial of her fecundity and the birth of Constantine, her lover declared his intention of legitimating the mother and the child by the celebration of his fourth nuptials. But the patriarch Nicholas refused his blessing. The imperial baptism of the young prince was obtained by a promise of separation, and the contumacious husband of Zoe was excluded from the communion of the faithful. Neither the fear of exile, nor the desertion of his brethren, nor the authority of the Latin Church, nor the danger of failure or doubt in the succession to the empire, could bend the spirit of the inflexible monk. After the death of Leo, Nicholas was recalled from exile to the civil and ecclesiastical administration, and the Edict of Union, which was promulgated in the name of Constantine, condemned the future scandal of fourth marriages, and left a tacit imputation on his own birth. The succeeding years of the minority of Constantine were occupied by his mother Zoe, and a succession or council of seven regents who pursued their interest, gratified their passions, abandoned the republic, supplanted each other, and finally vanished in the presence of a soldier. The death of Constantine was imputed to poison, and his son Romanus, who derived that name from his maternal grandfather, ascended the throne of Constantinople. A prince who, at the age of 20, could be suspected of anticipating his inheritance, must have been already lost in the public esteem. Yet Romanus was rather weak than wicked, and the largest share of the guilt was transferred to his wife, Theophano, a woman of base origin, masculine spirit, and flagitious manners. The sense of personal glory and public happiness, the true pleasures of royalty, were unknown to the son of Constantine, and while the two brothers, Nicephorus and Leo, triumphed over the Saracens, the hours which the emperor owed to his people were consumed in strenuous idleness. In the morning he visited the circus. At noon he feasted the senators. The greater part of the afternoon he spent in the Sphaeristerium, or tennis court, the only theatre of his victories. From thence he passed over to the Asiatic side of the Bosphorus, hunted and killed four wild boars of the largest size, and returned to the palace, proudly content with the labours of the day. In strength and beauty he was conspicuous above his equals. Tall and straight as a young cypress, his complexion was fair and florid, his eyes sparkling, his shoulders broad, his nose long and aquiline. Yet even these perfections were insufficient to fix the love of Theophano, and after a reign of 4 years, she mingled for her husband the same deadly draught which she had composed for his father.
Having poisoned her husband, Theophano then took to her bed a soldier, Nicephorus Phocas, though the church refused to sanctify their marriage. Nicephorus reigned 6 years, only to be murdered in 976 AD by one of Theophano's many lovers, John Zimisces, who became emperor in turn. Having acceded to the throne, Zimisces dismissed Theophano.
In their last interview, she displayed a frantic and impotent rage, accused the ingratitude of her lover, assaulted with words and blows her son Basil, as he stood silent and submissive in the presence of a superior colleague, and avowed her own prostitution in proclaiming the illegitimacy of his birth. The public indignation was appeased by her exile and the punishment of the meaner accomplices. The death of an unpopular prince was forgiven, and the guilt of Zimisces was forgotten in the splendour of his virtues. Perhaps his profusion was less useful to the state than the avarice of Nicephorus, but his gentle and generous behaviour delighted all who approached his person, and it was only in the paths of victory that he trod in the footsteps of his predecessor. The greatest part of his reign was employed in the camp and the field,